Hello, this is Mirella. Just a quick note to let you know that this episode was recorded before isolation measures were implemented. We've held it back for the past few weeks so we could focus on pandemic-related content, which we thought was important to share. We really love this episode, and we hope you will too. Enjoy.
Welcome to Hot Plate, a post-foodie podcast. I'm your host, Mirella Amato. Today on Hot Plate, the delights of eating with your hands, finding the bliss point, molecular coffee, and sweet bacon snacks.
Okay, what have you brought? What have you brought this week?
I brought it's an interesting study. It has me maybe more perplexed than anything else.
Yeah, tell me why. Let's hear about it first.
It's a research that was done at the Stevens Institute of Technology.
Thank you.
And it has to do with eating with hands.
Okay.
The study has found that people do find food tastier when they're using their hands, except for they zeroed in on a specific type of person, which they call high self-control.
Yeah.
So their results suggest that for people who regularly control their food consumption, which I mean at this stage is probably 90% of the
kind of everybody, exactly.
But direct touch triggers and enhances sensory response, making food more desirable and appealing. And it's this control piece that has me really thinking, because it tends to imply that there's something, you know, visceral or transgressive about eating with your hands.
Yes.
And it made me think about etiquette.
Totally.
Of eating with hands, because I know that I always eat chicken on the bone with my hands, no matter where I am, because I know that worst case scenario, if someone's grandmother chides me, that in the rules of etiquette,
Emily Post said that it was
in
okay.
There.
Right.
And so I just for fun thought I would locate all of the foods that you are allowed.
Oh yeah, yeah.
To
this
etiquette.
Is a really good. Yeah,
tea
this
with
is,
your hands.
Tell me.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I thought you'd be entertained.
I'd love it.
So artichokes.
Yes.
And that's in the case where you're actually peeling each
and dipping,
piece off
individually.
Asparagus only if there's no sauce.
The unsauced asparagus is my favorite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bacon again if it's dry, if it's not dripping with grease.
Bacon.
You are allowed. Bread.
Yep.
Cookies.
Nice.
Obviously. That would be hard to tackle with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
Corn on the cob. Chips. French fries. Chicken served on the bone, as we mentioned. Hamburgers are okay, which surprises me because a lot of people pull out the knife and fork with hamburgers.
That seems so crazy with a hamburger.
It not only seems crazy, it looks crazy. hors d'oeuvre, which I don't know how you say in English.
Yes. Hors d'oeuvres.
Hors d'oeuvres.
Terrible. Hors
canapés. Crudités. Yep. Oysters.
Okay.
Shrimp, as long as it has the little tail.
Has the tail handle.
On the end.
Yes.
Sandwiches. Small fruits and berries on the stem. That is the list.
Do you know what's curiously not on there?
What?
Pizza.
So I did find pizza on some lists, but not on any authoritative lists.
Okay.
And again, pizza is something that I often see people
I see lots of fork and knifing through pizza. It's
fork
true.
And knives.
It's true.
So I'm guessing that one's maybe up for debate. But, you know, on this list is a number of quote unquote ethnic foods are missing. Right. So pizza is very Italian. It wouldn't have been on the original British list of what's
acceptable. Well, and
that's
just it. Yeah. So obviously I come from a solid hand eating cultural tradition.
Right. That's what I wanted to ask you, because I read that article.
I wrote this piece for Today's Parent about there being a very mannered way to eat with your hands.
And I want to hear all about it.
And so this, what I think is so fascinating about this is because I've eaten food with my hands since I can remember, I have always had this idea that food tastes better when delivered to your mouth by your hands, because my whole life has had the experience of both. Right. And so to back up in the piece, one of the things I talk about is the way my father taught my brother and I to eat with our hands. And he was very serious
about there's a actual etiquette to
yes,
it.
Yes, very much so, right?
Etiquette.
He was very serious about, because essentially we're talking about tearing off a piece of chapati or flatbread and then using it to scoop up a mouthful of food.
Right.
Right? But it's like when you're eating, you assemble one mouthful at a time, keeping everything else essentially clean of the touch of your fingers, right? It's not like you're sort of mushing it all together and then taking it all down. And my dad used to get very serious with us about the amount of mess allowed on our fingers.
Oh,
right. He would say that we weren't allowed to make any mess beyond the first knuckle. That was the rule, and he'd give us a concession to second knuckle because we were kids and had smaller fingers.
And had tiny fingers.
Right? But he's like, soon you will grow up, and when you're an adult, one knuckle, right? No mess. Very tidy, no slurping, no, right? And even the plate that we leave, you bundle it up. So essentially, you do like a piece of chapati, take your little curry or whatever, the vegetables or meat that you're picking up. Mm-hmm. And then you can just pop that into your mouth.
Just the one bite.
Just the one bite at a time.
You don't make a big...
No, it's not a big...
Roll
like,
and then eat it like a burrito.
Not at all, right? And in the context where it's rice, so it's not the flatbread boat that's scooping something up, you kind of mash it together so it holds. And then you bring it
with your fingers.
With your fingers. And we're talking ring finger, like pointer, ring... pointer, middle, ring, and baby. These four.
Oh, you don't use your thumb?
Thumb, not so much. It's this kind of clawing together work. Mm-hmm. Thumb hangs out as the anchor because when you bring it to your mouth, the thumb is a catapult that shoots mouthful in. Right? And I remember when I was, and so you'll see Indian people, we do, there's a lot of, and in this process, you'll see your thumb can wipe the fingers too. To get everything really
tidily. That way
tidily,
your dad won't...
Exactly. To get everything really tidily into your mouth. And so when I was reading this and even just thinking about this list that you've just given me, one of the really important things that I learned when I was writing that piece is that I had conversations with my friends who have British or European heritage. And they were talking about the amount of conditioning and training and scolding that they have to let go of to be cool with eating anything with their hands.
Right.
Right. And that really spoke to, like, that really had made me connect to this article and the idea that it's that this law, this release of control,
there's
and
a
that
freedom
it was this major
and
emotional
a letting
move.
Go.
Because there's so many rules in this cultural, you know, context.
Not
about
to mention
the
connection.
Yes.
Right? There's a connection that's
I
made there
so.
With
I
your food.
So, right? And the because we Indians eat everything, there's just spoons, but the spoons are more about putting the food onto your plate than it is putting the food into your mouth.
Yes.
Right? It's about taking from the communal and setting your own thing up, and then you sort of have at it with your hands. Which I, it's so curious for me to see the hesitation. And I've walked people through it, right? Because they're like, I can't, this is, and just the notion that you will lick your fingers and that you will get messy and that, and in many Indian restaurants and Indian houses, there are taps and sinks conspicuously located near tables for you to wash your hands before
so
and after,
you can
right?
Wash
because this
after.
Is the thing.
So if there's no tap there, is it okay in terms of the etiquette for you to lick your fingers clean?
So the one does not substitute for the other.
Okay.
Right? Hand washing always happens.
Right.
And really, there's a practical piece because if it's Indian food, there's oil and spices and all these things that will linger on your fingers. And if my mother would catch me out somewhere during the day and catch a whiff of lunch or dinner on my fingers, I'd be in major trouble.
Also not great. Okay.
Major trouble. But
and it
in
makes
the
sense
context,
you're spooning from the communal bowl.
Yeah, and then, generally with my left hand, but I'm eating with my right. You know, you
with
generally
right.
don't use the hand that you're eating with to spoon out, right? There's a Hindu, a lot of, because this is about a Hindu context, there's lots of like cleanliness and purity stuff that rolls, which is also this idea that your left hand is your bathroom hand and your right hand is your eating hand.
Which goes against everything that this European etiquette is about.
Yeah.
I was in a restaurant a couple of weeks ago and it was a barbecue joint and we had ribs. And the person across from me was eating them with a knife and fork.
God bless
and
them.
And I was... I just went in there with my hands. But guess what? Yeah. Ribs aren't on the list here.
Ribs
so I guess
on
that
list.
Is the proper way.
That's really fascinating. Ugh.
I'm guessing that the Stevens Institute of Technology is not maybe the most diverse.
Yeah, well, this is
as
it,
they were
right?
conducting this study.
It.
If this
it's a
because it's definitely this transgression piece. If we're talking about control people,
clearly, right?
You know, people who were not feeling controlling about their food. There was no difference whether they were eating with their hands or not.
So it's about the restraint and the distance between you and your food too, right?
Certainly knowing you and having had this insight into your culture, I think this study, you know, is geared.
There's a bit of
they should
bias.
Have, I think they should have mentioned that.
I think so too, because it's not it's not a mystery.
You can't
right?
make a generalization there.
No, you can't.
Joshnar, are you familiar with the bliss point?
I was not before this.
Okay. Let me tell you this.
Yeah, tell me.
Because I'm going to guess that you haven't seen That Sugar Film.
No,
which
I haven't.
Is a documentary
no, I know
that
the
came
one
out in 2014.
About. I haven't seen it, yes.
Just, you know, be prepared to be upset watching it. But so it's a documentary. I think it's an Australian man. And he decides over the course of 60 days to consume the average U.S. consumption of sugars.
Okay.
Every day.
Okay.
So the average amount of sugar that people eat per day. And
the existing, not the recommended.
The existing, not the recommended. And he does it all. He doesn't just add, you know, packets of sugar to his diet. It's all hidden sugars. So he eats the exact same calories as he would normally, but switches what he eats. And then his food, his body just. It's pretty impactful.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, long story short, that was the first time I heard about the Bliss Point because he talks about it. And the Bliss Point was discovered by this man named Howard Moskowitz, who is a psychophysicist. He works in marketing.
Okay.
And he, I mean, we all know that when you eat sugar, your brain loves it, releases a little dopamine.
Yep.
Right? And so what he figured out is that if you take a food and add a bit of sugar and then add a bit more sugar, add a bit more sugar, add a bit, and have people taste it, they will like it more, 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 more. And then there's a point at which you add sugar and they like it less.
Mm.
So the bliss point is that absolute maximum amount of sugar.
Oh, it's that peak sugar in the mouthful.
Peak deliciousness.
Mm.
And so he started there and then he's now expanded it. And now it refers to the ratio of salt, sugar, and fat.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is there is this maximum amount of salt, sugar, and fat that is just to the edge of what is most delicious before it drops off into being cloying or whatever the fat and salt equivalent of cloying are.
Yeah.
So this is something that really interests me, and I've been reading up on the Bliss Point as a concept. A lot of people are accusing companies of using it to make foods addictive. I mean, they certainly use it to make foods delicious. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about foods, let's specify junk food.
Yes, clearly. It's clearly because you can't manipulate wholesome food this way.
No.
Right? This is about things in packages with ingredient lists, right?
And I think wholesome food will generally, I mean, I think you could probably create a bliss point by mixing them, but foods will generally have either like a lovely amount of fat a lovely amount of salt.
That's right.
Or a lovely amount of sugar, but rarely the three in this perfect combination.
This trinity of things. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it, I really thought it was fascinating to know that this was a thing and that this was a place and a point and a notable goal.
Yeah, and a manipulation.
It is a deep manipulation. there's no question about that. What I was curious about is this bit about the about it targeting the reward zone in the brain, right? Because it echoes to me of that conversation about treats and that sweet things are treats and that you get kids, you know, we give them lollipops for doing thing, you know, for having to getting a shot or going to the dentist or whatever it is. And it seems to me like it makes sense to perpetuate the cycle.
Yes.
Right?
For
that
sure.
seems like the tool, the mechanism is about a reward. You deserve a break.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve a treat. You've been working hard.
Yes, and the other piece of this, which is really interesting, is there is a biological component.
Okay.
So just like we were talking about in the last episode, the second stomach,
mm-hmm.
we are, again, our bodies are wired to seek out sugar, to seek out salt,
yes,
to seek out fat.
Right.
These are three things that our body looks for.
Right. This is a staying alive thing.
It's, again, biologically wired, right. Evolutionarily. I'm so proud that I can say that word now. Took a little practice. So the idea is really exploiting the fact mm-hmm. that our bodies just naturally, you know, want
right.
sugar. They want salt.
We will always be hungry
for
these.
And they want fat. These were necessary to our survival
right.
back then. So now that they're exploiting that just to get it to the maximum place possible, which I think is part of the reward experience.
Mm-hmm,
your
mm-hmm.
body's saying, yes, you've done good.
Accomplished.
You got me everything
yes,
I need.
Yes, yes. Although the other thought that I had when I read this is mm-hmm. that this really just appears to be attempting to cultivate a dopamine addiction.
Interesting.
Right? Essentially, because the sugar nod is about release of dopamine. Right? Which is that pleasure, satisfaction, accomplishment, whatever it is, right?
And that's what a lot of people are accusing junk food companies mm-hmm. of doing, is making their food addictive.
Yeah. I think we're kidding ourselves if we imagine there's none of this strategy. There's a blurred line here between mm-hmm. Great flavor and this sort of addictive hook, right?
Yeah.
Because the cook inside of me, I'm always trying to create great flavor. Everything I do is about creating a delicious flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But I never have the thought about hooking somebody in, you know what I mean? Or
right.
or trapping somebody or you know, catching somebody the same way. Because I don't necessarily, like, I don't know, it's because I don't necessarily want to need to sell them more of anything.
Well, that's the thing.
Or,
you're not mass producing,
right? Not mass producing
right?
anything. I'm just having
you know, this
over
is,
for dinner.
You know, junk food, so the whole idea is you can't have just one, right?
That's it.
You have one and your body just thinks, ooh, that was perfect. It has everything I need, biologically speaking.
Yes.
And I feel my dopamine rush. I feel great about it. I'm going to have some more.
So on that point, the mm-hmm. cook inside of me and the flavor chaser inside of me mm-hmm. was very curious about the criteria around this bliss point.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And what that maximum flavor is that keeps you back at it. Right.
Right.
Because in the piece, they talked about cherry vanilla Dr. Pepper.
Yeah. Yeah. Howard
right?
Moskowitz says that's his crowning.
And that is like that is the
glory.
Example. So and then they talked about Cheetos
mm-hmm.
being perfect because of the flavor content and the way they melt on your. Right.
Yeah.
And it had been a while since I'd eaten either of those things. So I picked them up.
Oh, so you want to taste
and
what?
And I want to taste
bliss point.
A bliss point now
okay,
that I have
it.
A conscious understanding of what it is. So here is a can of cherry vanilla Dr. Pepper. Amazing.
I have to admit, I have never had cherry vanilla
and
Dr.
me neither.
Pepper.
Me neither. I've never had cherry vanilla Dr. Pepper.
I don't think I knew it existed.
Me neither.
Oh, cheers.
Cheers. But to remember, like, it's not just a new flavor. It's a carefully crafted bliss point.
That's an intense cherry on the nose there.
Whoa, it sure is. Plus, it doesn't really go anywhere. I mean, maybe I'm asking
no.
too much of Dr. Pepper.
I mean, there's a complexity there.
Mm-hmm.
There's no fat or salt, so I'm guessing this mm-hmm. is the bliss point just
this is the sugar
wise.
Point, yeah. Curious, though, because Dr. Pepper itself has a cherry lean.
Does it?
You know, as it is, it's a cherry-ish. So clearly,
I am out of my element.
Right?
Here.
They've found yeah. something that the cherry is compelling.
Yeah.
Right? And then the vanilla is a curious addition because, in this context, it's just adding sweetness, just not the same way corn syrup adds sweetness.
Yeah.
Right?
And I feel like it's almost adding a richness
mm-hmm.
as well. Like
I think you're right.
A
much sweeter than my personal bliss point.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I would hazard that mine is probably lower than yours
I think
based
you're
on experience.
Right.
Yeah.
My bliss is not in this cup, Morella. That's
no.
the truth.
Let's explore the Cheetos.
We have the Cheetos here. Another bliss point. Now this, I'm guessing this is going to be a salt and fat.
Yes.
Right? Salt and fat bliss point. All right.
And
classic
the textural
Cheetos,
thing.
Warning, dangerously cheesy.
I have to make a confession.
Mm-hmm.
Because in reading this article, obviously they were talking also about manipulating people with textures.
Mm-hmm.
The most addictive feature of Cheetos is the fact that it dissolves in the mouth, which tricks the brain into thinking that no calories have been consumed.
I know.
And pretty much forever, I have always felt better about eating Cheetos than eating chips.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have always instinctively felt that it was better for me. And I have, on repeated occasions, turned the two containers around, you know, turned the bags around for the chips and the Cheetos, and the calories are the same. The, you know, the fats are the same.
And everything,
It's not, but there was something hardwired in me that always believed they were healthier.
That's so
and when
good.
I read this, I just felt so manipulated.
You're like, I'm a sheep.
Yeah.
Still interesting though, because the dissolve on the tongue, it really did happen.
Oh yeah.
Right? It really did happen. That this is a quality snacking product.
This is more my bliss
me
point.
Too. Me too.
The fat
me
salt.
Too. I will play this game for sure.
And I'm definitely reaching for more. They've been said. Oh yeah. You're
here
indulging
we go.
Me.
Indeed,
are you?
Indeed.
Okay. Here we go.
Indeed.
So I came across this company. I had to forward it to you right away. I could not believe it.
Uh-huh. It was really interesting. This.
Yeah. So it's a company called Atomo. They're based in Seattle.
Yep.
And they're making coffee without beans.
Coffee with. Tell me more.
They're a molecularly reconstructing coffee. Reconstructing its aroma, reconstructing its flavor, and of course, adding the caffeine in. And their whole idea is to make coffee with no beans and no bitterness.
Yes.
Was the other piece.
Right.
That I
found
very...
It was interesting. I didn't connect when I read that in the piece, the bitterness piece, and that the arrival of the milk and sugar in a coffee was about combating the bitterness. It makes perfect sense, but I had not really thought that through that way before.
Right. I mean, they did studies and they found that 68% of coffee drinkers don't like the bitterness of coffee. Mm-hmm. And to me, that explains how many people are drinking Coca-Cola.
Right.
And finding other sources of caffeine. And it's very interesting to me that there's this whole group that are addicted to the caffeine and to the coffee, but they don't actually like the...
Because
to me,
they just
bitterness
mask it
is an inherent part of coffee. Coffee should not be overly bitter, but there definitely needs to be bitterness in the balance.
I completely of the agree coffee. With you. I completely agree with you.
So, yeah, it's interesting because they did. So, their whole point with the bitterness, which I felt was a little bit manipulative, is that climate change is affecting the coffee plants. And that is causing the coffee beans to ripen too quickly. It's degrading the flavor, and that's what's increasing the bitterness.
Oh, I see.
So they are trying to, in their consumers' consciousness, have them equate bitterness with a bad coffee.
Yes,
which
I
think
see.
is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean,
and there's like a little like human arrogance connected to that with the like this is a naturally occurring thing, but we've decided that it's undesirable and we're gonna weed
that's
it out
right.
somehow.
Right. That's right. I mean, there is some truth to what they were saying, but you know, bitterness in coffee, like an unpleasant bitterness, is more often than not caused by people over brewing it or you know
or
human
poor
error
or something.
Poor roasting. Dirty equipment, all that kind of, you know, the coffee lingering in the equipment.
Right.
So then, of course, they did taste tests and people preferred the Atomo coffee, but they prepped everyone with this bitterness piece. And so everyone felt, you know, people are going to lean towards the option that is less bitter.
Mm-hmm.
Not me, but
me neither.
I felt like that was cheating a little bit.
I think it is a little bit, but I just have more love to keep the nuances of flavor alive. When I read it and I thought about it, my first instinct was this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This is nuts. What are we doing? That we cannot deny the fact that our collective addiction to coffee is here to stay, right?
Yeah.
That is not going anywhere.
No, it's increasing.
And if this reality of climate change and climate change's impact on coffee plantations and the growth of these beans is being harmed, then we're clearly going to need a solution. And so this feels like a good one.
For sure. I mean, it is one solution. Again, I feel like they're manipulating the facts a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I did as much of a dig as I could. There isn't that much information out there. But you know, they're really talking about deforestation
yes.
as a big issue.
Yes.
And deforestation became an issue when coffee production ramped up. So deforestation
yes.
is already an issue, not including
right.
climate change.
So it's not necessarily a new thing.
Huge increase
right.
in coffee consumption, which is causing this issue. And if anything, interestingly, the coffee community is taking climate change very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And it has triggered all kinds of conferences, all kinds of initiatives to find more sustainable ways
huh.
to grow coffee. And I'm not going to say that the climate change is not causing issues. A lot of, I guess, the coffee needs a certain temperature to grow, and the temperature is getting too hot, so that some of them are trying to move their
right.
fields to areas that are
warmer, yeah,
more appropriate, and
right.
that is causing some deforestation. But, you know, it's a very real issue. But they're manipulating.
Yes.
These are marketeers.
Totally.
I became aware of it out of the gate when they did a video, and the first thing they said was, "We are the Tesla of coffee."
Oh, there we go.
I was like,
that's
okay.
That's the truth.
I see where you're going.
The other thing that I am wondering about is the long-term impact of drinking a simulation.
Right. What is it made of?
Yeah.
They will not share.
There was distinctly no information about what this was.
A lot of vague language
yes.
around plant-based byproducts.
Yes.
Starting with plant materials, which is, you know, very vague and could
yeah.
go anywhere.
I agree.
And also, you know, they mentioned the caffeine, but there are other health benefits to coffee.
Yes.
And we don't know if these will, this molecularly
right.
reconstructed
we'll mirror
version.
Right, that.
So.
And like, what if?
Yeah.
Down, we don't know, generations down. We're seeing so many things now
mm-hmm.
that are impacts of decisions that we made a couple of generations ago about our food system and about what we eat and drink. What would it be if we've been drinking like a reasonable facsimile, if we start drinking this reasonable facsimile of coffee,
mm-hmm.
What's actually going to happen? You know, what's, you know, 20 years down the road?
And why are they not being transparent with their ingredients?
Yes.
That is more the concern.
Very good
for
question.
Me. If your whole thing is about being a better
yes.
solution, a better alternative.
And some sustainability, yeah.
You know, I would definitely try it.
Yes.
I'm absolutely curious, and I do like the spirit behind it.
Totally,
I think it's good
me
to have
too.
Different solutions to this very real issue, but I don't know. Like you said, first instinct, creepy.
Yes. Okay, so I found this piece and I had to bring it to conversation here, right? It is, it was like a press release about the fact that Dunkin' Donuts, very famous U.S. donut chain,
mm-hmm.
is now serving something they're calling snacking bacon.
Snacking
right?
bacon.
Right, exactly. Snacking bacon.
Just on its own.
Just on its own. So when you see the photo, it has that same like cardboard box or like sleeve that a fries can come in.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like six strips of cooked bacon.
Okay.
Right? Great. What I thought, like the bacon, we've seen the bacon and everyone loves eating the bacon. But what I think was interesting was that with the accompanying messaging and the tone of this really
mm-hmm.
struck me, because it was, first of all, they were suggesting that bacon and coffee are somehow some sort of renowned classic pairing.
Yes, they had
right?
specific coffees that they recommended.
Precisely.
I think there were some of their flavored iced coffees.
Which I was
yeah.
like, come on, you got to be
mm-hmm.
kidding me. Right? The other thing that they said, which is curious, is we believe the best way to enjoy bacon is simple. Eat it.
Mm.
And that really got me thinking, right? Because the intention and the tone there is like, there's more there than just here, have something to eat.
Well, in the climate of all these meat substitutes and people trying to move away from meat, it's a bold statement to say, just eat the bacon.
This is it.
Although at the same time, my mind went to the keto diet and carb-free diets.
Of course.
For those people, just eat the bacon makes sense, except in this case, the bacon is coated with a sugar.
Yes, it is.
Coating, which I'm pretty
yes.
sure is not keto or carb-friendly.
I am sure,
friendly.
Yes.
Sugar, brown sugar and pepper.
Something like that.
It's actually
that,
bacon
yes.
that is in one of their breakfast sandwiches. And they recommend it with this very sugary iced
beverage,
coffee.
Right.
But what I loved about it was this positioning as an afternoon snack.
Yes.
Right? So
right,
the idea
for that
is,
3-4 o'clock yeah. slump.
So
right.
in the morning, have your coffee and your donuts, and then in the afternoon, come back. We have this other thing that's
bacon
you know, just a perfect snack for you.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what drove me nuts.
Talk to me.
I don't know if you can solve this or if you have a gut instinct, but I looked at more than 10 articles and could not figure out if they're serving these hot or cold.
Oh, that's a really good question.
Because the recommendations specifically are iced coffee.
You're right.
With it. I put that in the press release, guys.
Yes.
Please.
It's true.
Makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. The fat, obviously, is the piece, right? And what's going to happen with the bacon fat in a hot cup of coffee versus what's going to happen when it sort of solidifies a bit with you as you slurp that frozen coffee down.
Right. And I don't know. As a snack, I was thinking it could go either way.
It could go either way.
I don't know.
Although, curiously, it's sweet. Because this really follows from your earlier suggestion that cooked, not super greasy bacon is an allowable finger food.
Oh, you are. Yes, that is.
Right? From our earlier conversation. Indeed.
Oh, good
right?
for you, Dunkin' Donuts,
that,
for being
indeed,
proper.
I know.
Yes.
I thought that was quite lovely and appropriate. So it's important to note that this is about a U.S. story, right? Because Dunkin'
right.
Donuts has pulled out of Canada just over a year ago, which makes sense. I mean, they're Tim Hortons is major. Although, how long do you think before Timmy's advertises their own snack and bacon?
Right? Canadian bacon.
Canadian bacon is a huge thing, although it's not what Americans think that it is. But at the same time, we know Tim Hortons has recently taken all of the Beyond Meat products off of their menu, perhaps making them much more inclined to put a weird paper sleeve of bacon
and then we can
on the
find
menu.
Out if it's hot
if
or
it's
cold.
Hot or cold.
Because I really need to know.
If you're enjoying our podcast, please support us at patreon.com/hotplatepod. Hot Plate is part of the Frequency Podcast Network. Please consider leaving us a rating or review. It helps others find us. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Hot Plate Pod. Follow me at Beerology on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And follow Joshna at Joshna Maharaj on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Original music by Dave Bell. Hot Plate is produced by Mirella Amato, that's me, and Dennis Coyne. Thanks for listening.